Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today, no Royce Young. I'm doing a solo pod. The solo pod was supposed to happen yesterday. I was recording it, something happened, and I only had about 14 minutes of the 35 minutes I recorded, so decided to just take the day off for this reason, because Tara Reid says, "Happy birthday, Talk Hoops." That's right, yesterday was my birthday. Tara Reid tweeted me, "Happy birthday," after a fine young fellow at How Drew You Do tweeted her and said that I am her biggest fan and to wish me a happy birthday. Not only did she wish me a happy birthday, but she followed me. So yesterday, I did not try to fix the podcast because it was my birthday and I just decided to be lazy and take a me day. Because as a blogger, apparently that's what you need to do all the time is take a me day. But yeah, Tara effing Reid. Tweeted me. So that's probably the biggest moment in podcasting history in terms of me podcasting. Not podcasting history. There have been some big moments. Actually, I don't even know that there have been big moments because it's podcasting. So how big could they really be? I'm sure there has been some news broken on some type of podcast that was pretty important. But I don't know that it was as important as Tara Reid saying happy birthday to me. We're going to do your questions today. I tried to do them yesterday, and for whatever reason, I only had about half the episode. We're making sure that it works today throughout. The first question is from Bo Schwartz Madsen, at Bo Schwartz. Most surprising 50-point game, Terrence Ross or Andre Miller? And then has a bonus question. It's definitely Andre Miller. Now, not that I expect Terrence Ross to drop 50 on any given night, because he's just not that good yet. I think he could be a pretty good scorer in this league, but he's not there yet. But he did hit, 10 threes? I mean, 10 threes, that's a lot of threes. It's not a usual occurrence. But you could tell, if you told me Terrence Ross is going to get hot one night and go for 50, it wouldn't blow my mind. Andre Miller, though, he doesn't take any threes. I'm pretty sure he did his 50-point game against the Mavericks, and I think Sean Marion was guarding him for a little bit of that, so it just doesn't make any sense how he was posting up people, getting by Sean Marion and dropping 50, if I am remembering the game correctly. I think he had 52 or something like that. But it's definitely Andre Miller, because I don't know that anyone's had a 50-point game with a set shot since, Paul Arizin or maybe Tommy Heinsohn. Even Tommy Heinsohn jumped a little bit on his jumper. The bonus cue is Terrence Ross going to be a poor man's Paul George? I mean, technically, I'm a poor man's Paul George. You're a poor man's Paul George. It's the level of poverty we have to deal with. I don't think Ross can even approach what George has done in terms of development and skill-wise and impact on the game. But I do think he can be a good rotation player. I think he can be a starter in this league. And I think that he has a pretty bright future. But in terms of being a poor man's Paul George, technically, yes, but not, I mean, there's a severity of poverty there. James Feldman, at jfeldman93. Zach, why do you think Kyrie is considered a better player than Mike Conley? I'm going to go, it's this weird discussion of overall skill versus impact on a game. Not that Mike Conley doesn't have a good impact on the game, but I don't think that you would look at what he does necessarily on its surface and look at what Kyrie does and say that they have a similar impact. Now, Conley is a better overall point guard. He's a much better defender than Kyrie. Kyrie still doesn't play any defense. Mike Conley is one of the better, if not the best, defensive point guards in the league right now. He certainly manages a game well. He can shoot. He can score, but doesn't have a prominent role in scoring. And I think that's where the kicker is with Kyrie's impact is Kyrie is taking the focus of the entire defense at all times. Whenever he has the ball in his hand, they are worried about where he is going next. With Conley, it's not necessarily that way. He's kind of the third option for the defense to worry about, because they're just going to think that he's going to try to get the ball to Marc Gasol or try to get the ball to Zach Randolph, and from there, you're going to get the action in the offense, whereas you don't think Mike Conley is just going to... They're not running 30, 40 plays for him to isolate or come off pick and roll in with the hopes of him scoring the basketball. So I think it's just it's an impact versus overall skill debate. If you told me you think Mike Conley's better, I wouldn't agree, but I wouldn't think it's crazy. But I definitely think Kyrie is better because he has a bigger impact on the game. And he has a much crappier team than what Conley has. So it's kind of unfair to go to the, Conley wins games argument, because Kyrie's still very, very much early in his career, and he's played for a really terrible team the entire time. My new best friend, how Drew you do? What two NBA players are most likely to be Daft Punk behind the mask? I'm just going to say it's you and me at this point. I've got a serious bromance for you getting Tara Reid to follow me and tweet me happy birthday. It blew up my phone. It blew up my phone so much yesterday that there was a certain point where I thought, oh my God, did I tweet something or did I say something that got me on Deadspin that got me fired? And I just haven't heard the fallout yet. Like, what did I do? That's how much my phone went off. But it was just people amazed at the charitable move you made in getting her to tweet me. So it's you and me. You and me are the Daft Punk of the NBA. At Zoom onto Yamaha, still awkward to say. Which current NBA player would you most want to put out an album? Maybe it's a technicality. I'll go Rasheed Wallace. You can say he's not a current NBA player. He's current enough for me. And it just has to be a spoken word album. Not much. I don't need him to rap. I don't need him to sing. I don't need any of that. I just want, I don't know, roughly 27 hours of him talking about whatever he feels like talking about. That would be Grammy-worthy, the album of the year. Speaking of the Grammys, Brian Langford, at BLangford95, did you watch the Grammys and what were your thoughts on them? I watched about half. I watched the second half of the Grammys. Missed the first half because I was traveling back from New York, which is the reason we didn't have podcasts. It was just the logistics. The scheduling while I was in New York just didn't match up. And then Monday, I was scheduling wasn't working out with recording a podcast. And at a certain point, I just decided I'm too tired to do it. But yeah, I did watch the second half of the Grammys. I watched all the performances the day after. The Kendrick Lamar Imagine Dragons performance was by far the best performance of the night, in my opinion. I mean, that was just, they should have ended it on that one. It was just, oh my God, it was killer. The way they did end it, though, was weird because they just started playing like the thank you, Delta, for flying in our guest, and they've stayed at this hotel during the performance. Like, they just cut through, at least they did on my end of the broadcast, maybe not on everybody's. And it kind of ruined the effect of whatever final performance was there. So that wasn't fun. But I love the Beyonce Jay-Z one. I thought the Paul McCartney one was just awkward. Like, he's at this point in his life, this doesn't take away from anything he's done, but at this point in his life, he's just not a good singer anymore. And I don't even know that he's that good of a performer once you get past the mystique of, holy crap, that's Paul McCartney. Like, he can't sing anymore. The music's fine, but it's just, like, throwing him out there with Ringo Starr just makes me want to listen to Beatles music from 40 years ago. Not necessarily listen to the current two living members, you know, get through a song. So I thought that was awkward. I actually liked the Macklemore. Is it Macklemore? Is it Macklemore? I think it's Macklemore. The Macklemore performance. I'm not crazy about. I think the song's catchy. I don't really care if he wins or loses. People have been up in arms about him getting whatever Grammys he got the other night, and I just don't care enough about the Grammys to ever have an opinion on it one way or the other. I don't listen to his music. If that song or the Thrift Shop song are on, I'll listen to it because, I don't know, they're pretty catchy. But I thought his performance with the marriage of the, you know, different couples and, you know, just the whole impact of that moment was really cool. That was a really cool moment. It was almost ruined though, because whatever is left of Madonna came out there and she was dressed like a 1920s gangster or some kind of like super villain in a Bond movie. Like, I don't know why she had a cane. Maybe she has a bad hip at this point. But she was dressed kind of like an awful person. And I just thought, like, not only was she dressed horribly and she's not a good singer at all, but the person she was singing next to, the woman who does the hook for the song, just blew her out of the water. So it made it even more awkward than it should have been. The Pharrell, Stevie Wonder, Daft Punk performance was fantastic. I thought the Pink performance was really good. Other than that, I don't care about who won the awards at all, though. The topic of the day seems to be the Detroit Pistons and their trade possibilities. Everyone wants them to trade. I apologize if I brutalize your name here. Anish Ramaswamy, at Anish Swami, asks, does Detroit make a panic move trade Josh Smith or Greg Monroe or fire Mo Cheeks after this slide. Also, what's my favorite city? Favorite city is New York. It was Paris. I was able to go there, I think, 2 years ago? Year and a half ago? 2 years ago? And fell in love with the city. It was only there 5 days. I'd love to go back and experience it more. That was my favorite. But New York's always my favorite. I love going there. You can do anything there. You can do anything and everything without trying to do anything. It's just a fun city to walk around and find what you get into. So that's my favorite city. As far as the Pistons, I don't think they'll fire Mo Cheeks in season. I could see them firing him immediately after the season. They can't trade Josh Smith. No one's going to take that contract. They say Greg Monroe isn't available right now in trades, but that could either be they want to see what the market price for him is in restricted free agency this summer, or they want a team to just blow them away right before the trade deadline with an offer. I think if the most likely is firing Cheeks, I don't think they'll trade Greg Monroe, but I'm usually wrong about whether or not a team will trade a player in season, because I just always think, oh, they'll be patient. Teams should be patient. But teams aren't patient. It's Joe Dumars. So I could see him making a panic move. I don't think it's very likely. I think they want to see a full season of what this team looks like and then make adjustments from there. Phil Castle at White Castle asks, if all NBA players had to compete in Mega Hunger Games, who would be the favorite? Any interested alliances formed? I think the funniest alliance would be whoever just begrudgingly teams up with Kendrick Perkins, because he'll realize that once he's in the Hunger Games, the tough guy act doesn't really work anymore. He's actually going to have to fight. Actually, I don't really know what Hunger Games are. I've never read the books. I've never seen the movies. Are you just fighting for food? Is it like a super episode of Supermarket Sweep? Like, what's going on? Are they... You have to kill the other person? I know I've seen, like, posters with Jennifer Lawrence, who has, like, a... I don't know, I think she's got bow and arrows. So maybe that would mean Steph Curry would win because of the accuracy. Or Kevin Durant because he's kind of just murderous right now. But I guess if you're fighting for food, if that's what it is, I'll go with Peck. I just don't think anyone's beaten Peck in a fight. I think there are people who could put up a good fight, but I don't think anyone's beaten Peck in a fight. Peck wins the Hunger Games. At Aussie Piston, Ryan Lynn asks, if you were in charge of fixing the Pistons, what moves would you look to make? Well, first, I'd get rid of Joe Dumars, because he was good. He's not anymore. We need to move on if you're Detroit. I would do whatever I could to move Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings, which would be very hard because they still have 3 years after this year left on their deal. I think your core has to be Monroe, Drummond, KCP, and then whatever big-name player you can bring in before you have to have extensions for both Monroe and Drummond. Monroe comes up this year in terms of restricted free agency. Maybe to get rid of Josh Smith, you have to include Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I would be willing to do that. I like Caldwell-Pope. I want him on the team. I'd want him as part of the core moving forward. But if you have to give him up in order to move a big contract like that, he's not so good that I would feel bad about that. I probably wouldn't want to give up a draft pick instead, but I guess it would depend on the deal and who you're getting back. But those would be my moves to figure out a way. I mean, get rid of Stucky, get rid of Villanueva. I mean, both those guys expire, but find a way to maybe get value for them before the trade deadline, even if it's just a second-round pick. And then move Jennings and Smith whenever you can and just try to build around that core and definitely get a new coach. I like Mo Cheeks. I think he's been a good coach in the past. He certainly has been terrible this season. Our friend Curtis Harris, at Curtis Harris NBA, I hope the next EOB pod addresses the triumphant rise of DJ Augustine. We need to talk about this DJ Augustine thing. I think it's great that 23, 24 games into his Bulls career, he's figured out how to hit three-pointers. He's averaging like 13-6, so I don't know that he is... I guess for him, in relative terms, it's a triumphant rise. But the fact that there are media members in Chicago calling him Derek Jr., I'm assuming they're not referring to Derek Fisher and they mean Derek Rose. That's infuriating. He's still... Look, if you want to believe in 24 games of evidence over 4 years of not being able to hit a shot, by all means, go for it. I'm fine with that. Don't expect me to buy into 24 games, though. I'm going to need to see at least a year, 2 years out of him being able to make a shot. He's hitting like 42% from three. With the Bulls, he's hitting like 43% of his shots overall. he's not been bad. He's been nice for them. But let's pump the brakes on a little triumphant rise talk with DJ Augustine. At A Contrived Life, over-under on trades at the deadline for Danny Ainge. I'll set the number at 1. I'm going to go over. I don't think we see a big move. I really don't think he's going to move Rondo. I think he'll try to move Jeff Green if he can, just to get a little flexibility. But you may see him. I mean, this may be an easy cover for him to go over by being the third team involved in acquiring a second-round pick. They can move. Like I said, they can try to move Green. They can move maybe Avery Bradley. Maybe you can even move Jared Bayless to a contender in trying to get a draft pick or two back. But I think they'll be involved in trades just to get a second-round pick. They're hoarding second-round picks right now. So I think that you'll see a lot of minor moves with this Celtics team and not this big one that everyone keeps expecting. At Castle Heights 41, regarding the injury epidemic, what explanation is most plausible, least theory that it can be attributed to too much AAU ball? I don't think it's that. I'm definitely not an expert in this field at all, but I don't think that too much AAU ball, you can change your body so much. And yeah, while it's growing, it's still susceptible to injuries and chronic problems, but I think that you can change your body so much once you get proper training that probably won't have a major impact on it down the road. I think it's just their schedule is too crazy. These guys don't get that much rest. Some of that is self-inflicted with the going out all night. Some of it is just the fact that they're traveling so much. They really don't have much of a break. It's why these guys nap all the time in the afternoons before games. One, to catch up on sleep, and two, to kind of get their body ready. I just think that if we could find a way to cut 10 games out without hurting player contracts and team revenue, that would be the best way. Maybe get rid of a few back-to-backs. But for the most part, I just think that these guys, their schedules are so impacted. I think they become overtrained to deal with that schedule. And in the offseason, they get everything so finely tuned. It's almost too finely tuned to where there's no room for error. There's no give. And these tendons and ligaments are wound up so tight with these almost overdeveloped muscles in their legs and upper leg, lower leg, that I think that it just makes it more susceptible to tear. I think it's why we see so many ACL tears. The guys are maybe too trained. And we need to find a balance. But again, I'm not an expert. I'm sure there's some trainer or some physical therapist just laughing at that explanation. But that would be my guess. I definitely don't think it's the AAU ball. At Curry Lee Pick Pop, are you optimistic or pessimistic about Harrison Barnes' future? I'm not pessimistic at all. I know Warriors fans are down on him right now because he's struggling to play. It's concerning that he can't dribble a basketball when he's faced against a defender. That's something he definitely needs to develop. And I'm not saying he's going to be Paul George, but Paul George also couldn't dribble a basketball against defenders like 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago. So the fact that you can develop that skill, it's harder to do once you're at that stage, but you can do it, and he's definitely skilled. He's shooting well from three, I believe. I think he's around 40% on the year. And the defense is okay. He's just not having a huge impact, especially not after what we saw in the playoffs. I think people expected, myself included, expected that to be like a coming out party for him when it happened. I just think that if you're looking for a second-year player to set the world on fire, and if he doesn't, you think like, okay, well, it's a wasted pick. It's a horrible pick. I just think that's too reactionary. And for me personally, I don't see the point in really overreacting. There's more pressure on it on the situation now because the Warriors are pseudo title contenders, right? Like they have a legitimate shot at competing for a spot in the finals this year, but they need everything to go right for them. And Barnes has to play well. That has to be part of the going right for them. And if it doesn't happen, then you feel like this team is underachieving, underperforming, and then you look at who's underperforming, and he's one of the big ones. But for the most part, I think that. I don't know, we get these crazy expectations for first-round picks, especially top 10 picks, and sometimes it just takes guys a little bit longer to come around, and it doesn't mean he will for the Warriors. Maybe he goes somewhere else and turns it around. Maybe he never turns it around. Maybe he's just always kind of an okay player. But I don't think there's any evidence that should suggest you should be either optimistic or pessimistic. I just don't think we should have feelings one way or the other yet. It's too young. It's too early in his career. At Cameron 98, how much did you love the J.R. Smith Swaggy P matchup? This is from Sunday when the Lakers and the Knicks played. I loved it in theory, but they combined for 23 shots. Each player should be getting 23 shots, not combining for 23 shots. I don't know why we didn't just clear the court and see who's the better horse player. That seems like a better ordeal than having to watch Ryan Kelly try to guard Carmelo Anthony. At turnaround underscore J, what do you think is Andrew Wiggins' dream situation between the Jazz, 76ers, and Bucks? Definitely not the Bucks. That organization is a mess. They have ownership issues in terms of who's going to be the owner after Senator Cole moves on. The management's a joke. The roster's a joke. It'd be fun to see him play with John Henson and Giannis Alphabet, but I don't think that's a good situation, because look at the guard play. Like, who's going to give him the ball? OJ Mayo, Brandon Knight, Nate Walters. Like, that doesn't seem fun to me. I think the Jazz are intriguing because they've got such a good core, and it would allow them to have a little bit of an upper hand when dealing with Gordon Hayward's restricted free agency this summer. But I don't love the situation with Ty Corbin as the coach right now. I know a lot of Jazz fans are frustrated with him, but I think it's a good situation. But I think the Sixers would be the best situation, because you look at, new ownership group that seems to get it. They brought in Sam Hinkie, who's going to be a good GM. They've got a lot of exciting players. They've got an up-tempo system. They've got a really good coach in Brett Brown. I just think that you look at that. If you're Andrew Wiggins, you probably want to go to the Lakers above anybody. But as a second choice with like the most realistic options, I think that Sixers idea just seems like a dream for him, because he can be the star there. He can reinvent the franchise as a good team. He has a system and a style that would really benefit his play. He's got a point guard who'll get him the ball. Like, I think that's a pretty good situation. Speaking of Gordon Hayward, at UT underscore Jazz underscore Nation asks, what do you think happens with Gordon Hayward this offseason? I think ultimately the Jazz will re-sign him by either coming to an agreement or matching an offer sheet. I don't think they'll let him go. And it's really hard to set up a sign and trade through restricted free agency. I mean, look, he's clearly their best player. He's clearly a better player than Derek Favors moving forward. And he's the type of guy, as your second or third guy, you can really do some damage with if you build the team intelligently. And he's just such a good playmaker. He's such a good all-around player. I don't think an offer sheet of $50 million over 4 years or whatever a team can offer him is going to break the bank for the Jazz. And I think that's a good amount of money to commit to him, and I don't think he's really going to go anywhere. Second question from Utah Jazz Nation. If you had to pick between Popovich and Tom Thibodeau, who would be a better wingman in a line dance bar? It's Pop, and it's not even close. First of all, he's going to be able to help you adjust to whatever line dance is being done. I'm not all that familiar with line dancing, but I do know that there are some different ones. I mean, clearly everyone can do the electric slide. That's not that hard. But there are different line dances that Pop is just going to know. He's going to know the right wine to pair with that. He's going to know how to, talk to the ladies about anything, get you guys dancing in the right manner, the right rhythm to really benefit, really get those emotions going, and get you on the same page and looking to extend the night. Whereas Thibodeau's, you're never going to be allowed to stop dancing. You're always going to have to do shots. He's just going to grind you into the ground with dancing, with instructions. He's going to be yelling at the other women in that hoarse voice. It's not a soothing voice for a woman to hear at a nightclub. It's going to sound like there's danger imminent. And I just think that Pop is the way to go. He's a fun-loving guy. If you ask a stupid question, he will let them know that he agrees that it's a stupid question. It gets them laughing. It gets the flirting going. I think that that's easily the way to go. At Spoonie011, if a team had five prime Kevin Garnett's on defense, how many points per possession would they give up? I think 31. I'm going to go in the 40s. That Kevin Garnett in his prime, and what you guys saw with the Boston Celtics was great and all, but that wasn't even close to his prime either on defense or on offense. Flip Saunders used to use this kind of pseudo zone back before zones were sort of legal. And he would throw KG at the top of it to harass point guards. And it allowed KG to play passing lanes, to help on the wings, to help on the perimeter, and still help down low. And when you have a 7-foot gangly, arm-flailing, inflatable tube man coming at you, it's just much harder to find that quick pass out of the post. And so they just could do so much. It allowed him to come in and really read the angles on the rebounding. So five of those guys, you're not losing really anything on defense. I'm going to go in the 40s. Really good right now is I think the Pacers give up 95. So that would be a scary thing for offense to go against. Spoonie also wanted to know, is Shane Heal the greatest shooter ever? Assuming yes, was there a conspiracy to keep him from dominating the NBA? Shane Heal could stroke it. That guy was amazing. He got in a fight with Charles Barkley once. He had a cup of coffee in the NBA, and he had some international play. But that guy could shoot. If there was a conspiracy, they simply weren't ready for Australians to start dominating the NBA. If I would just assume he paved the way for Andrew Bogut to come over here and be a great defender. And no, he's not the greatest shooter of all time, but he's up there. He's definitely up there. At Diamond Cubes wants to know, did you ever get to talk to Channing Frye about the origins of the nickname Buffet of Goodness? I did. I will actually, hopefully, I'm thinking Friday I will have a little spot on that, on a little post on that on CBSSports.com about that, about his game and kind of the centered around the nickname. So hopefully that'll be Friday, maybe Sunday, but most likely Friday. And Channing Frye was just he was funny to talk to about, and after it's posted, then we'll talk more about it on the podcast. A couple of final things I wanted to talk about just before we end the episode. I know it's a short episode today. We'll have guests and stuff the rest of the week. First, didn't get a chance to talk about Carmelo Anthony's 62-point game. It's crazy that he did all of that on jumpers. I mean, not all of it was on jumpers, but the majority of that scoring was simply pull-up jumpers, spot-up jumpers, got to the free throw line, but 62 points, and he hardly attacked the basket at all. That was one of the greatest shooting performances I've ever seen, simply because he didn't get a lot at the basket. That was just the buzz kind of surrounding it. Like, yeah, it's against the Bobcats. The Bobcats are down. They're not as good defensively as they were the first couple of months. And, you know, they couldn't put up a fight to where he could really stay in the game and get a chance to really go for like 70, 80 points. But 62 points in 38 minutes. He had 13 rebounds. He didn't have an assist, which people like to point out. If you're going for 60, I don't want to see any assists in that stat line. You were gunning. You were hot. There's no reason to pass the ball. You've got that kind of fire behind your hands. I'm glad he didn't have any assists. No assists, no turnovers. That was like the ultimate gunner moment. 35 shots, 62 points, no assists, no turnovers. That's just him getting the ball, firing it up, which is really how it should be when you're that hot. I don't care if you didn't make plays for other people. Like, screw that. You shouldn't be making plays for other people. You should be having plays made for you. And he only took 4 shots in the restricted area, 5 shots in the paint overall. That's just phenomenal. And then there's Kevin Durant's run right now. He's averaging like, I don't know, like 37, 38 points a game over like the last 14 games. Something stupid. He had 41 points the other night. He's on a historic run like we've only seen a few times in history. And he's doing it with such amazing efficiency. He's like 50, 38, and 89 or something like that for his percentages over the stretch. Just ridiculous. The game winner against the Hawks. The fun thing with him is that everyone already knew the ball was going to him, but with Westbrook out, they know the ball is going to Durant. They're sending double teams at him, and just he sees the double team coming, and before it gets there, he just fires up a shot. But it's a good shot. It's not a bad shot at all. So his recognition of the spacing on the floor, where to be, he's making plays for others. I mean, it's not like he's gunning without passing. He's averaging, I don't know, 5-6 assists a game during this stretch, rebounding really well. His defense has been solid despite all the effort he's putting out on offense. And seeing a guy run at him to double to get the ball out of his hands, he's like, all right, you want the ball out of my hands? Here, why don't I throw it at the rim? He's just on this other level that's completely appointment viewing. I'm actually going to be at Timberwolves Pelicans tonight. But the first 2 hours of the night, I'm going to spend watching the Heat Thunder game on ESPN because you just simply can't miss it. Like, even DVRing it and watching it later is fine, but you kind of got to live it in the moment. And players just don't give us that all that often, even the great ones. I mean, this is a very special Kobe Bryant January 2006 type stretch that we rarely get to see. I mean, even LeBron's streak of, what was it, was 6 30-point games with 60% shooting. Like, that was great, but that was 6 games. And sure, it hadn't been done before, but 6 games, like, this is 14 games and counting. And he's got, what, 11 straight 30-point games. And I don't know what the modern record is. It was like 16 by Kobe or something like that. But this is a Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James level performance, like extended stretch of performance from Kevin Durant. And I don't want to overanalyze it. I don't care if his nickname is Durantula or Slim Reaper or whatever. Like, he's just murdering the NBA right now. And it's a feeling that, being able to watch that, I feel so fortunate that one, I get to do what I do, but two, that we as basketball fans get to watch this guy put his thumbprint into the history of the game. Like, not that he already wasn't a great historical player, but this is a time where I don't know if he's starting to take over the league. I think, you know, I still think LeBron's the best player, and I don't think it's necessarily a question, but we are seeing something incredibly special right now. And instead of overanalyzing and wondering where it sits in history and where what it means for his team, and will the team be okay once Westbrook gets back, and will he be able to do this in the playoffs and all that crap, like, just watch it and just enjoy it. Like, this is a special, special time for basketball. The league is in amazing hands. And I, you know, other than Tara Reid tweeting you happy birthday, it really doesn't get much better than that. I want to thank you guys for listening. Thank you for our patience with... for your patience while we weren't recording. Again, I apologize. That was primarily all me and just the scheduling while I was in New York. Please, we said it before, I hate to badge you for it, but please subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review if you can. Hopefully 4 or 5 stars. It is my birthday after all. It'd be crappy to give me less than a 4-star review on the podcast. We're full bore going ahead through the rest of the season. We'll have some cool stuff from the All-Star Weekend. Matt Moore and I will be in New Orleans for All-Star Weekend, and we will try to bring you some pretty cool stuff then. Please, 5-star review, 4-star review, subscribe. Your support means everything with where this podcast has gone and where it's going. And so we thank you very much, and I can't wait to wish Tara Reid a happy birthday on Twitter.